All right, we're going to keep talking about money. This time we're going to talk about the affordable housing, though. This summer, the Legislative Coordinating Council approved special committees to address several issues. One of those issues was affordable housing. The Manhattan-Riley County area has a relatively high housing costs. What strategies would you support to address this tight housing market, which many blame for the high housing costs in Riley County? So here's the question again. What strategies would you support to address the tight housing market, which many blame on the housing costs in Riley County?
I think there has to be a way to incentivize those that are able to provide through low-income housing in the units if possible. I think those things need to be really addressed, and the utilization of funds that are already there. I'm not asking for more tax money. I'm saying use fiscally sound, responsible ways to use the $3 billion that we have sitting in the bank as a state. Those need to be really looked at. If that's a real concern for our people in low-income housing, health care, child care, all those issues, we need to be able to look at those and utilize those funds to help incentivize. I don't say throwing money at situations don't change situations. It never has. It never will. The importance of incentivizing those that are willing to help themselves is the value and of importance. So we need to be able to help those to provide for those services, and to do it, I would propose incentivizing through the use of the money that's already available.
Yeah, great question. So I've just been appointed to an interim committee to look at available and affordable housing in the state of Kansas, which I'm really looking forward to. We have a meeting, our first meeting in November. The state has put in millions of dollars into housing. We have the Kansas Reinvestment Housing Incentive District Act, which puts in millions of dollars to refurbish districts. We have the Community Development, CDBG, Community Development Block Grant. I couldn't think of what it stood for a second. They revitalize neighborhoods. These are grants that go into not just demolishing houses or anything, but to revitalize them. We have lots of programs for land trusts, land banks. We have tax dollars not only for public housing, but innovative housing so that we can make sure everybody has housing. We are looking at homelessness and why are people homeless? Is it just lack of housing? How do we structure it so different so that people are not unsheltered? We are working with Be Able in our local community, but other organizations such as our Manhattan Emergency Shelter. We are working with the Homeless Coalition to make sure everybody is housed. These are serious and complex issues that are being dealt with, and money is being put into them every single day. But it's going to take a lot more than that. The city of Manhattan has a landlock issue. Land here is extremely expensive, so we are looking at alternatives, working with Josh Brewer from Habitat for Humanity. Lawrence has a good program for land trust where there's a land that you can purchase and put it under a trust so that it is low-income individuals that have no interest or some interest to purchase these lands and build homes, and then we can sell them. So it would be like a revolving loan for some of these homeowners. So we are looking at innovative ways. Ogden has, I think, 20 or maybe even more, lots of land that they already put infrastructure in, and now they're looking at putting housing on. Those are the types of housing possibilities and incentive programs we are looking at, and most of them are state funded.
Oh, is it my turn?
Maybe.
Sorry. Sorry about that. I was just thinking, okay. So one of these positions that came out of the Legislative Coordinating Council, one of these other special committees, was about wages, specifically wages for state employees. And as you know, housing costs and worker wages go hand in hand. 30% of Manhattan population works for a governmental entity. What is your position on changes to the state employee compensation schedule? What is your position on changes to the state employee compensation schedule?
Yes, I think it's extremely necessary. You know, a lot of government officials are certainly not getting rich off of any kind of money that's coming towards them. They're maintaining just a average lifestyle and hoping money goes into CAPERS and into their retirement programs. And if you haven't seen an increase in 9, 10, 15 years in some cases, that CAPERS is not going to increase. We see it in our universities, for example. My husband, Brian, worked at a university for many years, and he knows a lot of those individuals did not get pay raises. But if you say you also can't have an unfunded mandate, you can't say all state employees at universities or such need to have increases in their salary and not fund it. That can't just fall on the responsibility of the university or of local, of other community government organizations. If you're going to put in that kind of a requirement, it needs to be state-funded as well, some kind of revenue coming to pay those, for those things. So I am in favor of it because I know they're not going to be millionaires. They're just trying to make a living, and they deserve it. There is dignity of in labor, and we need to show it with paying people properly.
Agree. We need to take care of those that are willing to take care of us, right? And through public service and et cetera. The issue as far as philosophy, because I've heard a lot about more pay, more pay, more pay. Well, where does that money come from? It's passed on to the consumers. And so what we need to be looking at is lowering cost. How do we lower cost and expenses of living? What can we do to ensure that we get those things lower so that my dollar goes further in my position, whatever that may be? And so I think that's an important factor. So that means in our own personal budget, what do we do at home? We tighten our belt and we cut it down. We need to be looking at cutting expenses rather than just continue to up. I agree with you. Yes, they should be paid fairly. And with that, then how is that money going to be given to them? It's passed on to the consumer or to the taxpayer to increase the pay, correct? So we need to be looking at cutting expenses down so that their dollars go further, everyone's dollars go further, and be able to do that in a responsible, fiscally sound way. I think we need to look at all options. And that's one of the things that you'll find, at least with me and how I've handled things with my school districts and et cetera, is work with diverse groups to ensure that everyone is successful in the best way that we can do that. That doesn't mean everybody's happy. But at the same time, take care of those that are willing to help themselves and move forward with ideas. So to me, philosophically, we need to be looking at cutting expenses and taking care of that end rather than the continual increase, 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 increase. Because what are we getting for our product? What are we seeing?
All right, we're going to carry on with the topic of jobs and wages. And this question is actually going to be about group disparities. Specifically, it's a long read, so give me a second to read, give you some background, and then I'll reiterate the question.
Okay.
We know that an economy that works for all leads to stronger, more stable communities. In Manhattan, the annual median household income for African Americans is $44,000. For Hispanics, it's $33,000, and for Native Americans, it's $18,000. This compares to a $52,000 per year for white households. If elected, what will you do to support job creation in Manhattan, and specifically, what will you do to support job training, placement, and retention for people of color? What new legislation would you create or support? I'm going to rephrase the question or repeat the question. If elected, what will you do to support job creation in Manhattan, and specifically, what will you do to support job training, placement, and retention for people of color? What legislation would you create or support?
Is it my turn? I'm sorry.
Okay, I believe so.
Well, thank you. That's a great question because the job situation, I can tell you what I've done and what I'm doing now within my particular job. And that's the ability to help people in jobs. And there's 58,000 construction jobs next 3 to 5 years in Kansas. Average starting salary, $60,000. So there's an opportunity for those to be able to get a great job, make a great living, stay in Kansas, because, right, the other issue we have, all the people are leaving. So where's the money coming in to try to help when all the people are leaving? How can we attract and ensure that happens? So within our trainings and the ability to help all people, we allow that to happen within what we do within our state workforce initiative through Build Up Kansas. As far as the percentages and the things, we need people to understand, to your point, what it means to go to work and stay at work. We teach those skills. We teach employability skills within our curriculums. We also teach communication skills, because those things are so important. What ends up happening to a lot of people, you talk to them, I just can't get anybody to show up, and I can't get them to actually work. And so the importance of teaching them to do that early on, as educators, we both work to do that, to provide those students with a background so they can be successful. But there are job opportunities available if people are willing to work and to be employable.
Yeah, thank you for the question. So again, another very complex question in a minute and a half. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, when you talk about group disparities in employment, it's very vast. Not only is it just getting the job, but they're oftentimes not even looked at. Their applications aren't even looked at when they apply, because people do look at the name and they do make a judgment. And that's just, you can say, a human nature. It's just an intrinsic, implicit bias that we have. So they feel like certain people are ready for certain jobs. That's where you hear the term black jobs. Like, what does that mean? And you can't have those types of terms. Those are very hurtful. So I know in our community we have the black entrepreneurs of the Flint Hills. Sheila Gasper, Ellis Gasper, worked so hard to create this organization. I mean, she's a superhero because she's worked on it along with her husband, her son, and just having these black entrepreneurs, which weren't even seen anywhere, but they were working their tails off. They weren't even recognized by the Manhattan Area Chamber of Commerce. She had to be very aggressive and forceful to do that. What are the needs are they facing? They don't have access to capital. They don't have access to resources. They don't have a grant writer. And these are hardworking individuals. And we as a community need to go to their stores, but we don't even know where they are. I'm having a baby shower for my daughter on November 8th, and I went to one of these meetings that Sheila was having, and I met all their vendors. And I'm going to order specifically from them. And you might say, well, no, that's not fair. Why are you ordering from them? Everybody else is giving business to everybody else. These are great jobs. These are great businesses. And we are not going to them because they don't have the resources to advertise and market on their own. They cannot survive. And that's when they spiral backwards. So the Department of Commerce has done an outstanding job of trying to elevate these organizations. They've had recognitions and trying to support them with capital, interests, grants, and such to be successful. They created a small business entrepreneur director right now to listen to our community members and see what they want for these women and small businesses so they can be successful.
My turn?
Yes.
Okay. So sorry.
Eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
Yeah, I know. Okay, we're shifting topics. We're going to gun violence. Mm-hmm. The Living Wage. The League of Women Voters has a position to reduce gun violence. What is your position on gun violence? And to that end, what measures should be legislated in Kansas? The League of Women Voters. We have a official position to reduce gun violence. And what is your position on gun violence? And to what end? What measures should be legislated in Kansas?
Sure. Thank you for the question. Yeah, I think gun violence, like I said, is huge. Mainly being a teacher and having to keep my kids under the desk because we are afraid of gun violence. I think in Kansas, it's very normal for people to have guns in their trucks and driving around. I've had kids that go on weekends with their parents and they go hunting. It's a very normal thing to do. We are very much a community that enjoys outdoor activities and enjoys safety in that manner at the same time. I think the problem comes when it's just unsanctioned, you can just do whatever you want. So I remember Brad Schoen, when he was with RCPD, he would get phone calls saying somebody walked in with a rifle into my store, and he would say, I can't do anything about that. That's not against the law. And now we have, you can walk into Aggieville, you can walk into just about anywhere and have any type of gun, because we have taken away background checks, we have taken away, I think, age limit, we decreased it to 18, so those individuals can buy a gun. We don't have red flag laws where we can at least see if there's an evaluation for mental illness or domestic violence, so we don't make sure they don't have access to guns. We have more suicides than ever before because of guns. We have homicides and accidents by children that accidentally found a gun because we also didn't want to commit to having safe storage for guns. We ruled against legislation such as that purposefully because we felt they were violating gun ownership. This isn't just about the Second Amendment. It's about being responsible gun owners. And I think a vast majority in our community want that. We don't need to be living like this, and we don't need to be scared. We can put certain measures and parameters around it. Fort Riley, you can't just go on with a gun. You can't just leave with a gun. Fort Riley doesn't allow that. And they're trained. As a teacher, I don't want to be trained on how to handle a gun in my classroom. I don't want to know if the gun is in my drawer and how quickly I have to get it out. And I'm getting hard enough trying to learn curriculum, let alone where my gun is. Taking a pencil from a student is harder than trying to find my gun. Mm-hmm. That's not where you should be putting money in for teachers to learn how to use a gun. So I would advocate a lot of good policies that are being talked about but have not been voted on.
Yes, gun violence is an issue, but all violence is an issue. Because it doesn't matter if it's guns, knives. Look at the countries that did all the way with guns and had strict Australia, for instance. Then they had to deal with knives. The issue that we need to really be talking about is the people and those involved, the use of guns. I agree with you as far as they should not be a access to the point of where they can, someone that's mentally disturbed, have the ability to do that. But at the same time, continue to protect individuals' rights. And one of the things we did with our school is active shooter trainings. We did everything to protect those children. We need to do whatever is within our power to protect our children and each other and the importance of doing that. So I think the issue that really concerns is that guns are always going to be, unfortunately, if we overregulate them, will be in the hands of criminals only. And that is, they don't go through anything. Obviously, they're not going to look to license it. They're not going to go through any background check. They're not going to do anything. And so that is an issue as well. But as far as guns, we need to, again, continue with individuals' rights, make sure we do everything within our power to protect each other and our kids, especially in schools. And then as far as the issues that have come about regarding why they're being so violent, we need to address those at the earliest level, because that's where the real issue is what are we doing about any type of violence? And I think this common accord, just like this today, why can't we talk about things? We all have different agreements or different sides, but let's sit down and talk and debate and come to an agreement that benefits most of our people. And I think that that's where we need to be headed again. We've got to get to that point. And so the issue with me is not necessarily the guns. It's with those that are having the guns and those understanding what they need to do as far as helping each other versus fighting with each other.